case we haven't met, I'm Dino Colombo. I represent people hurt by a truck. It's what we do every day. Justice isn't just a word, it's your right. We'll stand up for you when others can't. Hurt by a truck? Call Colombo Law.
They say they were kept in the dark, some city council members in Pittsburgh, with a quote-unquote secret deal between Pittsburgh Mayor Ed Gainey and Pittsburgh Police Chief Larry Scarrato that would allow him to return to refereeing college basketball.
And during that session yesterday, as we heard from Tamira in her story, Deputy Mayor Jake Pawlak said that they did plan to inform the council members, but word got out to the media before they could get to the council.
So the stinking media is at fault.
It's our fault.
Yeah. You know what? I've thought a lot about this. Obviously, when Larry Scarrato came as the chief, there was a deal that, you know, he was done reffing. But then I thought, okay, if it got to the point where he's going to, you know what, I really miss it. It is a great detachment from the gravity of running a police department. I get it. But when he decided to go back and do it, he obviously went to the mayor and said, hey, I'd like to find a way to work this out. And then when it came to light, it just came too much. And then he chose a quieter life. I don't know, being a referee in college basketball, you still get hollered at, but it's not life and death.
Talk about being a glutton for punishment. Who
really?
I know he enjoys it, but I just don't see. I couldn't handle that. The abuse, the verbal abuse from the coaches and the
right.
I mean, the fans. You know,
so he can take the heat, and you know, I think he's done a very solid job as the police chief of kind of quieting things down a little bit, even though, you know, you're never going to make everybody happy in that role. And it's such an important role in public safety. So if his heart's not 100% in it and he's chosen to do college basketball, so what's the big deal? Well, the big deal is money.
Well, yes, it is. And one of the council members said this. Well, this is Bob Charlin said this. He said, 4-plus years of the Gainey administration, we will have had a chief for only 18 months. Actually, that's more like 24 because Scott Schubert was here for the first 6 months of the Gainey administration. But right. Having said that, it's a valid point. And there's, you know, a pension to be paid for. There was the cost of the job search itself. And then, of course, his salary. And so we're running into the millions of dollars here. And for a chief that just was with us, it seemed like for such a short time.
So we'll see what this revelation yesterday reveals today. As Coach Tomlin would say, we'll let the week reveal itself, and then we'll let you know what happens next. In the meantime, right, Larry Scarrato has resigned, and will go on to coach ref in college basketball, the Big Ten.
His last day is supposed to be Friday, right?
Right.
Okay.
Meanwhile, what else are people talking about? You know what's circling is voter fraud concerns already and anticipating next Tuesday's election. And it has come up politically, obviously, since the last presidential election since. And now people want to be assured that their vote is counted. And others are making sure that it's counted once and it's a legitimate vote. Right?
Yes. I don't know what to say. I mean, as a voter, as a person who's involved in, you know, the election, participating, I receive a notice that when my ballot has been sent out to me, because I like to vote by mail, and then I, you know, send it back and I get a confirmation that we've received your ballot. You know, it's now in our hands and we're going to, you know.
And your vote has been registered?
Yeah. It's I know what I have to have in order to vote. I have to be registered. And to be registered, you have to be a citizen. You know, that these stories about, you know, non-citizens voting, you know, they're really concerning. I mean, if that's actually going on, because to register to vote, you have to be a citizen. That's like a fundamental part of registering to vote in the state of Pennsylvania.
So the integrity of the vote is actually at the heart of democracy. And, you know, if you don't have confidence in that, that's an issue. And clearly there are some gray areas and concerns with people, but we've been assured, and through the legal process the last time, it's not been anything that would actually have overturned the last election, yet people continue to suggest that it has.
Now, so, we have a couple of instances in the central part of the state where they've been finding ballots that are, or applications, I think, to vote that are bogus. The 2,500, I think, over in, what was it, Center County? Or
yeah, but by
or out
whom?
In Lancaster. Lancaster, I think it is. Yeah.
And they weren't accepted, so.
No, they had a press conference and came right out and said, here's what we found, and we nipped it in the bud.
So where do we go from here? You know what's coming on Tuesday.
Yeah.
No matter who wins, the other side may suggest that they didn't, you know, and here we go. So the divisiveness will not end on Tuesday in any way, shape, or form, unfortunately.
Maybe we'll have a decisive result. Maybe it will be a little bit more decisive
that.
Than last time.
Maybe. Right now, I just saw the latest Pennsylvania polls, 49-49.
Yeah.
That's what it is today.
Right.
So if you don't think your single vote counts, and I tell you, both parties are really encouraging people to get out to vote because they need your vote can really, truly make a difference in this state, in this town, in this election.
One of the things that is interesting to me as a news person is that a much higher number of Republican voters, registered Republicans, are voting by mail or voting in advance.
Yeah,
much more so than the last time around.
I voted by mail last time. By the way, I'm voting in person this time, but you can go online in Allegheny County and it'll track your ballot was requested.
Mm-hmm.
You sent it in. We received it. Your vote has been, you know, registered.
I mean, they'll even send you an email.
Right.
You know, to confirm all of that. So,
and yeah. People will also be talking about, that was the crowd last night chanting Fleury, Fleury for Marc-Andre Fleury. You mentioned this in the newscast. Very rare for a visiting goaltender to get a standing ovation at the end of the game, even though you beat their team. In other words,
it's a lot of love for Marc-Andre Fleury in Pittsburgh.
The goaltender for the Wild, the Penguins lose 6 in a row, but a lot of people stayed to the end just so they could cheer Marc-Andre Fleury. That's really rare in sports today, which has also become pretty divisive. And by the way, just a sidebar, somebody suggested, yeah, TJ Watt's going to retire.
Oh, are you kidding?
How silly. And he said, as long as my body holds out, I'm playing. I don't know where. You know who generates that stuff? They just spew stuff. A lot of sports is just talk.
Yeah.
Not based in fact. They throw it at me. Throw it out there just to get a reaction. And they did. And TJ said, well, I'm not going anywhere. As long as my body holds out, I'm playing for the Pittsburgh Steelers. Download the free Odyssey app, AUDACY. Take us with you wherever you go, and we'll keep you posted. Breaking news, weather information, even high school sports. We're getting ready for a big weekend. Playoffs and high school football on Friday. And we got Penn Hills and Moon going at it. There are a lot of great matchups, and we'll keep you posted here on KDKA. Mention mail-in balloting, Paul, and today the U.S. Postal Service is suggesting that you should get your mail-in ballot if you haven't mailed it in yet today. Usually takes a couple of days to get there, depending, obviously, on where you live. So they're recommending that you mail it no later than today, just to be safe. But as long as it's postmarked midnight on Election Day, your ballot will be counted. So far this year, about 20 million Americans have already voted by mail, and another 13 million have already voted early in person. So today is the day. You said you mailed yours in already.
Mm-hmm.
So you're good.
Yes. Gotten a word back, I don't know, just a few days ago that they got the ballot back and it's in safekeeping now.
Yeah, and again, if I don't know what the surrounding counties have done, but in Allegheny County, they have a website where you can go if you had a mail-in ballot that tracks when they sent it to you, when they received it back, if you did mail it in and your vote is registered. Meanwhile, a big concern, and this will go way beyond the election, is they call them deep fake videos.
Boy, are they convincing, too.
A new study from a Utah Valley University survey finds that at least 60% of Americans can't tell the difference on social media, the ones that are fake and made up by artificial intelligence. Since 2019, the number of deepfake videos has increased more than 550%. Tech experts say the speed at which fake videos can now be created is, quote, a concern. And the first one I remember ever seeing was Tom Cruise. And it's this guy that is a lookalike. He's a doppelganger for Tom Cruise. And he started posting videos of himself in, you know, that Maverick uniform, uniform. And he'd be saying, he would be in parts of the country, and I'm like, wait a minute. It looked and sounded exactly like Tom Cruise. And then I realized it's not really Tom Cruise. It took a while. And now they're able to do this, and we've seen this in sports videos too, where they have a coach, and it looks just like that coach is speaking. And they're ripping their own team and players.
I think it's Paul Maurice.
Yes, that was one of them.
That was they had him at a news conference and saying things that, you know, we've never heard him say before. And cursing and stuff like that. It's horrible.
So they've done this with some of the candidates, and I'm not just talking about the presidential candidates, because there's all kind of stuff out there on them. But some of the other candidates, the lesser known, that people might not really know much about. So when you go to the ballot, everyone knows Donald Trump's name and now Kamala Harris's name. But then as you go down through the ballot, ask yourself this question. It's rhetorical. How many of those candidates do you really know anything about? Really? Outside of maybe name recognition and maybe not at all.
Where I am unfamiliar the most is with state legislators.
Yeah.
You know,
That's a good example. Or even, hey, school board members that make a lot of decisions about things that affect your wallet more directly and things that affect the kids and on a day-to-day basis can actually impact more. You know nothing about them. And I'm not, I'm just as guilty of not doing a lot of homework on some of those down ballot people either.
You know, which is interesting too, because when you think about, you know, what's the highest tax you pay? School tax, right?
Thank you.
Hey.
About the county tax, but it's really the schools that utilize those millage numbers to tax you. Mm-hmm. And that's the big payout.
Right.
That's the one, you know, it's a lot more than what you pay the county.
Very much so.
By the way,
in my neck of the woods, it's 3-1. You know, $1 for, you know, the county and 3 for the schools.
And how many for you? None. So mail your ballots in today, the U.S. Postal Service suggesting, just to be safe. I'm Larry Richard with Anchorman Paul Rasmussen. Next hour, our weekly visit with Rich Fitzgerald, who's the executive director of the Southwestern Pennsylvania Commission, encompassing 10 counties in the city of Pittsburgh. Among the topics, we are going to get some details on this $600 million revitalization plan the governor talked about for downtown Pittsburgh. Meanwhile, what are the candidates doing? The campaign update, CBS's Jared Hill.
Republican Ohio is one of a few states where split-ticket voters casting a ballot for one party for president, another for Senate, could dictate the control of Congress. All the while, you have those presidential candidates, though, really fine-tuning their message in the final days of this election.
It is time for a new generation of leadership in America.
Vice President Kamala Harris, before her largest campaign crowd yet, gave her closing argument in the same place former President Donald Trump gave his January 6th speech.
This is someone who is unstable, obsessed with revenge.
Trump took to the stage in Allentown, Pennsylvania shortly after, trying to woo Latino voters in the wake of a self-described insult comic at his Sunday rally, calling Puerto Rico an island of garbage.
I will deliver the best future for Puerto Ricans and for Hispanic Americans.
Trump and his allies are now seizing on comments made by President Joe Biden yesterday, after he too waded into the controversy.
The only garbage I see floating out there is his supporters. His demonization of Latinos is unconscionable, and it's un-American.
Remember Hillary? She said deplorable. Garbage, I think, is worse, right?
Biden later posted on X that he was referring to the comedian's rhetoric. One state over from the Commonwealth, increasingly red Ohio, is no longer considered a White House battleground, but it is knee-deep in the fight for control of Congress. Democratic incumbent Sherrod Brown needs Trump voters in his tight Senate race with Trump-backed challenger Bernie Moreno.
I want to maintain the control right now of the Senate.
You're not someone who always votes for one party.
No, I don't. Because you have to check imbalances.
CBS News is watching 10 other Senate races as Democrats face a tight map that leaves them with slim hopes of holding on to their 51-49 majority.
Going back to that presidential race, we know that today Vice President Harris, as well as former President Trump, are going to be stumping in North Carolina, as well as Wisconsin, while you have Vice President Harris also making a stop in Pennsylvania again.
CBS's Jared Hill. By the way, he's running for Senate. Republican Dave McCormick's going to be at Jurgles up in Warrendale. Paul, did you know what Jurgles has just added? Unrelated to McCormick's appearance. They've reopened the Donnie Iris King Cole Cigar Bar.
Wow. You know, the last time I wanted to go over to Jurgles was Leonid and friends were coming.
And this is the group, you turned me on to them. They do a tribute to not only Chicago, but
Earth, Wind, and Fire. Yeah. Tower of Power.
They are absolutely stunningly
good. I could not get a ticket. All of them were sold. The place was sold out.
Speaking of tribute bands, I understand at the City Winery Friday, they have the Desperado. That's the Eagles tribute band. That's one group that I always wanted to see was the Eagles. And I was all set to see them years ago before Glenn Frey passed, and of course, they're now they've lost other members, including J.D. Souther recently. But they're still out there touring. In fact, they were at the Sphere in Las Vegas, and so popular, I guess they've added some shows. That's another place. If you were going to go to a destination,
The Sphere is like the must see in Las Vegas now, right?
Yeah, I got a friend who's going out this weekend, and he's so excited, and I talked to Bob Pompiani last week. You know, Pompin' ain't easy.
Oh, that's right. He was there.
And guess who they saw?
The Eagles. Yeah, I remember that now.
So apparently Pompiani said that place, and our boss, PJ's been in that Sphere.
PJ flipped.
He saw you two there.
Yeah.
Said it's just hard to describe. Yeah. It's extraordinary.
It's an experience.
Yeah, so.
That's what I'm picking up from the people I know who've been there.
The Sphere. In Las Vegas, or you could just go to the Donnie Iris King Cole Cigar Bar at Jurgles, and if that's all you can do, that's not a bad way to end a day. We'll be joined in studio by Rich Fitzgerald, Executive Director of the Southwestern Pennsylvania Commission. Give you an update on mail-in ballots, very robust in Allegheny County. Mitsubishi's growing in the region. Amazon is expanding too. Halloween, obviously, tomorrow. And details on the $600 million investment that perhaps you heard Governor Josh Shapiro talk about to revitalize downtown Pittsburgh. It's a public-private partnership and a 10-year plan.
Now, what got my attention in that little rundown was Mitsubishi. I don't know a lot about what they're doing here. I want to find out.
All right. And I know you enjoy movies occasionally. You don't go to many, but there's a big holiday movie coming out on November 15th, and it's called Red One. And this is a big-time movie, $250 million budget.
Red One?
Yeah, and guess who's in it? Okay. The Rock, Dwayne Johnson.
Oh,
he's in every other movie that's released. Lucy Liu, J.K. Simmons, Bonnie Hunt. There's an all-star cast. And here's the description of the movie. When a villain kidnaps Santa Claus from the North Pole, an elf, extremely large and formidable operative, joins forces with the world's most accomplished tracker to find him and save Christmas. So there you go. We're going to give tickets away. I have a family pack of four. You get a preview before everybody else at AMC Waterfront Theater. The red one, 412-922-1020. Caller number, pick a number, Paul.
7.
It was the same number I was going to pick. 412-922-1020.
Beat you to it.
And you could see the red one on us and take your family.
I wonder if that's going to be the big hit that they're hoping it will be.
Yeah, there's always a Christmas movie, and you got The Rock in it. This guy is amazing. You know, he came out with his own, I think it was tequila during the pandemic, and he flew around the country promoting it. You know what they estimated? I saw yesterday that his tequila business is worth $2.4 billion.
Yowza.
Along with all the money he makes being a movie star and all his other endorsements. And he seems like a really good guy. Like, you know, he's the full package. So see the red one and let us know what you think. Meantime, we're also going to dive into the protections being done to ensure there is no voter fraud on Tuesday through the election process. There's a couple of people that obviously... this is top of mind for many. You want to make sure your vote counts, right? And I guess we're supposed to get some details on what the new technology is that they're able to help ensure that this time, obviously. There's been a lot of conversation. I don't think there's any state in the union like Georgia this year that has had more change in the process of voting.
They had a long and rather protracted, I guess is a better word to use, a political battle over changing their voting laws. And there was concern that it was going to, you know, keep people from voting. And it turned out to be the opposite happened. They've got more people voting and participating than ever. And I don't know where they were the last time I heard. There were over 1.5 million people had already voted in the early voting in Georgia. I don't know if it's up to 2 now or not, but I'm sure it's close.
Well, it's unprecedented. And Lynn Hayes Freeland, who we talk to every Tuesday, lives in Georgia. And she's talking firsthand about, you know, the stories surrounding the state itself and the changes they've made to the voting laws and that people have come out in droves. So it'll be interesting.
It worked. Yeah, they were trying to do, it worked.
Seemed to get people's interest. I mean, there's no other state in the union that's had more people vote already. And we'll kind of get an update, and I'll see if Rich Fitzgerald knows how many ballots have already been received in Allegheny County, because he was at the heart of all that, you know, 4 years ago. I remember seeing, you know, the CNN cameras inside where they were counting the votes. And you know,
the last time he was here, he described the surveillance, the video surveillance of the count in the areas where the elections supervisors and the people working in the elections department are working under the continual scrutiny of video cameras.
So we'll get the detail. We'll ask Rich about that and a lot more. We got a lot of good information, too, coming up about the region. Good morning, and every Wednesday in our 7 o'clock hour, we welcome in studio Rich Fitzgerald, Executive Director of the Southwestern Pennsylvania Commission, encompassing 10 counties and the city of Pittsburgh. Rich, good morning.
Good morning, Larry. A lot going on these days.
Wow. We have
understatement.
We have a long list. Let's just start with, and Paul and I talked about this earlier, mail-in balloting. We know 4 years ago, because of COVID, it was the first time that people could do this as a general election practice, and you had how many mail-in ballots in 2020?
In Allegheny County, we had 343,000 mail-in ballots that were brought in. 273,000 for Joe Biden, and 66,000 for Donald Trump. As of now, and this didn't count yesterday's last-minute rush. Yesterday was the last day you could apply for a mail-in ballot.
Right.
It's around 255,000 that have applied.
That's still pretty robust.
Yes, because you remember 4 years ago, a lot of people wanted to vote by mail because we were in the midst of the pandemic.
Right.
They did not want to go to the polls. Yeah.
Yeah, a lot more people are comfortable, yet have chosen the convenience of doing the mail-in ballot. The Postal Service is suggesting that you mail in today. However, it just has to be postmarked Tuesday, November 5th.
No.
No?
It has to be received by 8 o'clock November 5th.
So
if it's postmarked on the 3rd but doesn't get there until the 7th, that vote will not count.
So this is a really important, if you want your vote to count and you have a mail-in ballot, just send it in today.
Or you can take it to the drop boxes that are out there. There are drop boxes that are around the county, the most prominent one. And yesterday you saw the line at the county office building on Ross Street.
Yeah, it did. And a lot of people participating. Good to see so many people are active. But the big question then is, if I want to drop off a ballot, do I have to show ID to do that, or can I just drop it in?
You can drop it in, but you can only drop it in for yourself. You cannot take your spouses or your kids or... Now, you can do that at a mailbox. You can take to the post office your spouses and mail it, but to go to a drop box, you can only do it if you are the voter.
And again, it has to be received on Tuesday.
Yes.
Remember former Governor Wolf got in trouble because his wife took his ballot of all things.
Of all people, yes.
Of all people, the governor. But in the meantime, that's really important notes. And then, of course, I was looking at the weather. This weather has been crazy good for us. Just looking ahead of Tuesday, 75 and sunny.
There will be no excuse. So, not that anybody's not going to vote.
No snow, no rain, no issues with the weather to stop you from getting there on Tuesday if you're voting in person.
Yeah, we have in Allegheny County, we have about 900,000 registered voters. And 4 years ago, almost 720,000 people voted. That's a very, very high percentage. And I anticipate the same amount. The other thing I think when people look on Tuesday night as they watch the returns.
Okay.
4 years ago, we had something called the Red Mirage. And that showed that the Republican, Donald Trump, had a huge lead, if you remember.
Early. Sure.
Early in Pennsylvania, about 500,000 votes. But that was before the mail-ins were counted. And 4 years ago, it was so new that it took a long time for counties, including Allegheny, to count their mail-in ballots. So you are getting results Thursday, Friday of that week. I anticipate that on Tuesday, next Tuesday, we'll have something called the Blue Mirage because the mail-in votes will be counted immediately. I saw the county executive the other day, County Executive Emerata. She's fully confident that Allegheny County will be able to post their results of the mail-ins right after 8 o'clock. So you're going to see, most likely, a fairly significant lead for Harris. But then when the in-person votes start to get counted at 9 o'clock, 9:30, later on in the evening, you'll see just the opposite of what happened 4 years ago.
However, you are anticipating more Republicans using the mail-in ballot option.
You're already seeing that. I think 4 years ago, yes, it was about 80 to 20, Democrat to Republican. Now it's probably closer to 2-1. I think the Republican Party has made an effort to get people to do the early voting or mail-in voting, however you want to call it. And you will see more of that this year, yes.
All right, we got a lot to cover, including you're going to meet the founder of the Keystone Place Collaborative. What is that?
This is about space. I mean, we're talking about the futuristic jobs. We've been talking about AI and robotics, but we have a huge space collaborative here in southwestern Pennsylvania. Not just the work that goes in going to the moon and going to Mars, but all the materials that are made in those ships. A lot of them come from western Pennsylvania, manufactured by folks that we live around.
That even dates back to Man on the Moon with Rockwell and some of the companies. We have a great legacy.
We do, and we're seeing that this industry, which is close to a $500 million industry nationwide, we anticipate over the next decade it'll double to a $1 trillion industry. And again, we want those jobs right here in southwestern Pennsylvania. So we're going to hear from Justine Kuznicka, who's the leader of the Space Collaborative, in a little bit, and tell us a little more about what they just had a big conference. And let us know how it's going to benefit this region.
Coming up next with Rich Fitzgerald on the Big K Morning Show. Executive Director of the Southwestern Pennsylvania Commission. And just a moment, you're going to meet the founder of the Keystone Place Collaborative. Meanwhile, you had mentioned to me a couple of things that really caught my interest. Mitsubishi, growing in the region. A lot of people are like, I didn't know they were here.
Well, they have 800 jobs in Warrendale that they've been making things and developing things, and they're going to add another 200 with an $88 million investment that they're going to be making in the region to expand their manufacturing of switchgear. We've talked about how the electrification of this region and this country is way under what it needs, and it doesn't meet the needs. So the amount of work that's going to have to be done to improve the electrical grid and to build these data centers and the AI that's going to be needed is insatiable. We talked about that Mean Springs last week, the 600 right. jobs that are going to be coming here. This is just adding on to that. And I think you're going to continue to see these type of announcements of expansion of manufacturing and electrification here in this region.
So when you hear Mitsubishi, people might think automotive, but in this case, they're kind of like a company that does a lot of different things.
They do a lot of different things, electrical power, and they've been part of the group that's a part of the Allegheny Conference and some of the things that are going on here in jobs in this region.
Speaking of jobs and what's going on in the region, we welcome Justine Kuznicka. How do I say that? Kuznicka.
I think I got that right.
Justine, my apologies. Good morning. Hang on just a second. There you are. Speaking of technology.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning, Justine.
We can put people and things on the moon, but sometimes you can't get a phone call on the radio. But
so, Justine, you just had a big conference. I don't know that a lot of people know about how big how space and the economy is here in southwestern Pennsylvania. Tell us a little bit about, number one, the conference, but tell us about what the future for space jobs here in western Pennsylvania is.
Sure. So we're actually very excited about the prospects of Southwest Pennsylvania in the context of space. People may know of the company called Astrobotic Technology on the north side, which is a sole space company building lunar landers and doing a heck of a lot more than that. They're doing a lot of power, lunar infrastructure projects. They're probably best known for the Peregrine mission that was flown to the moon last year. But when we took a look at the broader Southwest PA region, there's a lot more happening that's very exciting. And so in 2019, we formed the Keystone Space Collaborative. It's a nonprofit 501c3 focused on growing the space industry, not just in Pennsylvania, but Ohio and West Virginia. We saw that, you know, we have a certain shared history of manufacturing, of advanced technology, and of real assets in the R&D universities around the three states. And a lot of those states were doing already work in the space industry. But here in Southwest PA, we have the University of Pittsburgh that just announced a program called Pitt Space, which really rounds up all of their space research and development activities, and that'll be growing. Carnegie Mellon has a NASA Center for Advanced Technology that's focused more on software and AI on the space side. And then there's we're surrounded by, you know, I would say over 100 suppliers that supply to the space industry or that are funded by NASA or DOD for space-related work just in I would say, the three-county area of Allegheny, Butler, and Beaver counties. And that's a significant number. And then when we expand that to the rest of the three states, we have over 770 prime recipients of NASA and DOD space-related contracts. So to us, that was a real clear there. We have universities like Ohio State, Penn State, we have that are doing space work, University of Cincinnati, West Virginia University. And so about once a year, we have gathered all of the space universities, space companies, government folks, economic development folks to get together and really in our name, it's collaborate on celebrating the opportunity of this region as it relates to growing a space industry and hearing about what that, you know, common regional narrative might look like. And that's what we did on Monday and Tuesday this week.
The other thing that I think that's happening here as well, not only are we excited about, you mentioned all the jobs, over 700 companies, 100 suppliers, and in the tri-state region, you're getting kids excited with the Moonshot Museum, allowing young people to really learn about the exciting things around space exploration and landing on the moon, landing on Mars, the things that are going. Tell us a little bit about the museum.
I am so excited about the Moonshot Museum. That is also on the north side. It's actually co-located with Astrobotic Technology, and it is designed to be really a unique living lab for kids and for the public to be able to come in and experience a space career readiness experience. But what they can also see is there's a large clear glass between the museum and Astrobotic's clean room. So Astrobotic, whenever they're building one of their missions, are building it in the clean room, and kids have a real opportunity to see how the magic is made. And it demystifies this concept that missions are done, you know, one by the U.S. government only, two at NASA or SpaceX or elsewhere, but they can be done here in Southwest Pennsylvania. And we just brought on a wonderful executive director, Dr. Jamise Brown, who is the first Black woman to run a museum of this kind in the space industry. And she's fantastic. She's been bringing the local community in droves to really share the story of the possibility of a space career for kids of Southwest PA.
Now, Justine, as people are stressed out right now over the election, and I've heard some people say if their candidate doesn't win, they're leaving the country. Are there any possibilities these folks are going to be going into outer space now? Are there opportunities for people that might not like the way the election goes next week?
Well, not quite yet, and probably we're not going to be launching anyone from Southwest PA, but I can appreciate that sentiment. However, I want to offer a calming, happy note to folks, which is the space industry is actually incredibly nonpartisan, and you know, the conference was a great example of that. We had Senator Shelley Moore Capito from West Virginia, who has been a staunch advocate for our work, with us on Monday to kick off the conference, and Congressman Chris DeLuzio came to close down the conference. You know, we had Matthew Cartwright from the Scranton area, Congressman Cartwright, speak to us, and we have an entire collection and collaboration of Republicans, Democrats, independents, everyone, you know, kind of politics don't really matter when you're talking about the space economy and the space industry. And it's something that everyone can rally around because it is so inspirational. It's really a on-ramp to STEM for children. It is, you know, I think everyone of a certain age remembers where they were when they saw the Apollo mission, you know, that took the Eagle down to the lunar surface with Neil and Buzz. And that powerful unifying moment is, I think, something that we can look to and celebrate, especially now.
Yeah, and especially in this Pittsburgh region, we have so many firsts to go along with that. So, Justine, thank you.
Thanks, Justine.
Time.
Keep up the great work.
Thank you so much for having me. Have a great day. Bye.
Justine Kaznica, founder of Keystone Space Collaborative, right here in Pittsburgh. 7:38, this is the Big K Morning Show. In studio, every Wednesday at this hour, Rich Fitzgerald, Executive Director of the Southwestern Pennsylvania Commission. And Rich, in the 10 counties, in the city in particular, you've heard a lot of talk about what can we do to this city. And then Governor Josh Shapiro announced last Friday, and you knew this was coming, a public-private partnership, a 10-year plan, $600 million deal to revitalize our city.
Yeah, the governor really put a lot of effort into this, a lot of political capital. His team at DCED, Secretary Siger, Lieutenant Governor Davis, they raised a lot of money privately, and the governor himself was making phone calls to corporate leaders in the region to say, look, we cannot let the second biggest city in this commonwealth go down. We've got to make sure that we are investing enough. And, you know, that the public-private partnership, the universities, the philanthropy all came together. And the governor had a great event on Friday in which it was packed down on 8th Street and Penn Avenue. And it really was a great success. And there's a lot of energy over the next 10 years. And I think whether you live in Pittsburgh or whether you even live in Allegheny County, you live in southwestern Pennsylvania, you know the importance of the core of this region, the corporate headquarters, where a lot of our cultural amenities are, obviously our sports teams, right here in the heart of this region. And it's been so vibrant, but, you know, since COVID, it's obviously had some challenges. And I think the governor wants to make sure he's going to do everything he can to make sure it gets revitalized.
Happy to hear this proactive plan. So give us some of the highlights. What exactly will we see happen, or what are some of the things that they think will really change the narrative?
There's about seven major buildings that where they're going to be doing some major investments, going from commercial office space to residential to get more people to move into downtown Pittsburgh. And we've seen the stories with the golf building. That's probably the most prominent of the ones that are going on, what Rugby Realty's trying to do to convert, again, one of our most iconic buildings for over a century, where so many people have worked there, their parents worked there, that, you know, again, fell on tough times that has happened during the pandemic. People working at home, people are not coming to downtown, converting that into a multi, you know, with a hotel, office and residential. And you're going to see that in about six or seven buildings right in the Golden Triangle. We've seen a lot of success in this region in places like the Strip District, places like the North Shore, Lawrenceville. But the Golden Triangle has really suffered in the post-COVID era.
Strip District is a good example because for years it was the same. You had the old rundown terminal building. Penn Avenue has been iconic. People kind of like it. It's eclectic, you know, walk, and the weekends it's jammed down there. But now that they've redone that, and as you know, for people who haven't been, the infrastructure, 1,000 apartments and townhouses behind the new terminal, which is all new and open, from behind there to the river, all these new infrastructure things that it, and continue to go up. That's just one example of how you can really change an area of the city.
And when you think about that, that's only about 7 or 8 blocks from the convention center,
right,
from the Golden Triangle where it starts. So we've seen a tremendous amount of private investment, some public work on the infrastructure, as you mentioned, the terminal building that they did a number of years ago. But yes, all the way back to the river, and then of course the river trail that heads out, which ultimately we hope that to be the Erie to Pittsburgh trail. But all those new high-end and mixed-use townhouses, condos, apartments, and the vibrancy, you can feel it. That's where Caitlin and I work every day, and you can actually feel it in the energy and the positive energy about people. And it still has the flavor of Penn Avenue.
That's what I love.
Penn Avenue hasn't changed, where Woolies and Penn Mac and all those great DeLucas have been. You've seen more changes back toward the river. That's right.
Right. And I love that because you have both options and people like that. There's no real cookie cutter businesses on Penn per se. And then you have some well-known brands, but a lot of cool stuff going on in the Strip District. And that's just one example.
And we need that to be replicated in our Golden Triangle, because again, so much with, you know, with Heinz Hall, the Benedum, the Union Trust Building, obviously what's got Grant Street and Ross Street, Smithfield Street. There just needs to be some more energy. And we're excited what Point Park University is doing on the Monongahela Riverside of town. And this was happening over on the Allegheny Riverside of town. And, you know, we saw what this region did 40 years ago when they came together to really create the cultural district, to clean up what used to be a bad place to go, Liberty Avenue, Penn Avenue. And again, the corporate leadership came together many, many years ago. We're seeing that again. And again, I give Governor Shapiro an awful lot of credit because he really put a lot of effort into this. And, knowing Josh and knowing the governor, he'll make sure that he continues to push. It wasn't a one and done with governor. He'll be making sure that we keep doing and the momentum will continue.
And coming up, Amazon's expansion and also a Brady Tunnel that's part of a trail. We'll get the details. Rich, I know this one's really close to your heart.
This is exciting.
You become quite the cyclist for people to do. It's with Rich Fitzgerald, Executive Director of the Southwestern Pennsylvania Commission. We talked about Mitsubishi growing jobs in Warrendale. What about Amazon?
Amazon continues to grow. We haven't heard that for a while, but yeah, they're going to add another couple hundred thousand square feet, which will probably be a few hundred jobs added on. They really like doing business in southwestern Pennsylvania and being so centrally located logistically. We've seen them grow their freight work and jobs out at Pittsburgh International Airport. So all good stuff when it comes to jobs. And the employment report, we didn't talk about it, but just came out. 18,000 jobs over the last month in this region. So unemployment continues to be very, very low, and employers are continuing to look and find workers. And you saw, I think it was UPMC that really ramped up the pay for nurses to try to attract.
Yes.
So the market is there for people to get jobs. And we talked about electrification and all kind of opportunities for young people to find jobs in this region.
Tomorrow, I'm going to have Jeff Nomers from the Building Trades. They have a big event coming up Friday and Saturday. We'll have some details on that. Speaking of jobs, and before you go, for those that don't know, Rich has become quite the trail cyclist, and you're excited about this Brady Tunnel.
Yeah, the Brady Tunnel is over 100-year-old tunnel, 2,400 feet. It's part of the Pittsburgh to Erie Trail we're trying to continue to build. And so a number of the county commissioners from Armstrong County, Commissioner Fabian, Commissioner Shea, and myself are going to be biking for the opening tomorrow, 22 miles from Katanning to East Brady. So a lovely weather day. It looks like on Friday, it looks like it's going to be good. So you never know what you're going to have. But the trails have also become a huge economic impact, had a huge economic impact in this region.
Yeah, we talked about actor Russell Crowe when he was filming here, loved our trails, bragged about it on national TV. Good stuff. So, Rich, we'll see you next Wednesday.
Think anything will be happening by next Wednesday? We don't know. Well, all I know is that we quit having ads Wednesday, right? I don't know what's going to happen to the media companies that have really done pretty well economically on selling ads over the last couple of months.
I don't know what you're talking about. Caitlin O'Connor, thank you.
Thanks, Larry.
All right, we'll see you guys next Wednesday. And welcome to the Big K Morning Show. Larry Richard being joined by the Executive Director at Light of Life Rescue Mission, Jarrell Gilliam. Good to see you again. You can see Jarrell also via our video mix at kdkradio.com. It's a whole new world, Jarrell. Thank you for being with us.
Yes, it is a new world, and thank you for having me, Larry. Always good to visit with you.
As you're well aware of, Second Avenue Commons reopened after the fire shut them down, and we're hoping that this week that provides some relief. So approximately how many people will they be able to handle that'll help keep people from living in the streets in some cases?
You know, there was some remodeling of what they, even in the programming that's there. And so I don't know all of the details. It was around 100 people that were coming off of the street there. They also have a plan for a the county announced a plan for overflow, which starts in November 15th when the weather starts getting cold. And I know there's an additional, there's a plan to be able to cover 600 beds during that for emergency weather or bad weather from the November to March timeframe.
And what is our status right now with people without homes in town? We hear so much about it.
Yeah, well, we continue to have the same challenge that we do nationally. It's hard to have a hard scientific number. We use this point in time survey, which relies on workers going out and physically counting homeless. And you just can't do that. The national average is that the number of homeless is about three times the amount of the point in time survey. And so when you think about it, as I talk, Larry, a lot, homeless are hidden in plain sight. If you might walk by a college student and you would think, oh, he's a college student. He goes to CCA, so you don't know that he's homeless. Or a mother with children with a stroller, you walk by her late at night at Point Park, you think you're just out for a stroll, but really she's trying to find a place to stay. So it's hard to go around and count homeless because you just don't know. And so that would, because of that number, it's hard to know exactly how many are out there. But we know it's growing. We know the tents are growing. We're seeing those. And I am concerned that we, although well-intended, we can be creating a system that's actually encouraging growth in those areas instead of getting people out of homelessness.
How so? And as, I mean, we've had this unusual stretch of really warm weather, but before you know it, we're going to get into the colder months, and that's yes. going to make it all that more challenging. So back to your last point.
Yeah, well, I'll say two things about that. One, Larry, is that traditionally Allegheny County has been below the national average in homelessness. And for decades, it's been that way. And part of those reasons are because we have some excellent organizations. I like to put Light of Life as one of them, but Operation Safety Net and others that lead the nation, actually lead the world in intervening in people who are experiencing homelessness. But what began to happen was this idea of placing people in homes during, you know, placing people in shelters for the emergency shelter, where it was constant. Instead of it just being at certain temperatures, it began to be, it was going to be open from, you know, November 15th to March 15th. And we know what ended up happening right before all the tents started popping up a couple years ago is that there are people that chose it as a lifestyle. They moved out of situations. They might have been doubled up with someone. There might have been other places. But now it was like for 4 months, I have free rent, no utilities. I can get my meals. And people begin to choose it as a lifestyle. And although it sounds good, you end up making the problem worse. And we see this across the country. So I'm concerned. I'm excited that we have located additional beds. From what I'm hearing, it's going to be 600 beds for overflow. Light of Life has increased our capacity for overflow to assist. But in the end, where my question every time is, what happens when they end? And so the end of March 15th, Larry, we can have a interview scheduled now. It'll be first they'll demand to stay longer, and we'll extend it maybe 1 month. Then after that, it'll be, no, you have to move out April 16th. And then at that point, where are those 600 people going to go? Because we don't have housing for them right now. And where all the tents started was a couple of years ago, we got to that point, and then someone started passing out tents. And then we started getting encampments. So it's a short-term fix, but it's going to create a big problem in the spring unless we come up with some solutions.
Are you working with other officials, since you're so passionate about this, on maybe another plan? Because 600 people, yeah, that's a lot of people.
That's going to be a lot. That's right. Yes, there have been additional conversations. The county and the city has been creating forums for additional to get feedback. And I'm always encouraging those dialogues. I want to be involved with more of those discussions. But essentially, Larry, in other cities, I've just visited. I just came back from Phoenix. I visited out in L.A. a few months ago. And cities where they incentivize people coming off of out of homelessness into stable housing, you are prioritized if you are committed to a plan to get out. In those cities, we see homelessness going down, stabilizing or going down. If people are choosing to stay on the street as a lifestyle, it's not an emergency situation, which is how Light of Life and other missions have been set up here in our city. It's called emergency shelter. So it's people that they had some kind of traumatic event and now they find themselves homeless. We want to help them. We want them to know there's always a place. But when you start getting into subsidized housing, that's a whole different thing about giving a person a place to stay. And the way it is now, a person, from what I was hearing from a police officer, a tent, a person can abandon a tent, they can throw it out and take it away. If another person puts up another tent, if they get to them within 48 hours, they're allowed to tell them they have to move. But if they're there longer than 48 hours, then their understanding is that they're not allowed to ask them to move. Well, that's just a crazy system that's going to incentivize people pitching more and more tents. What we have to say is, look, we love you, but because we love you, living in a tent by the river is not good for you. It's not good for our community. It's not safe for you. It's not healthy for you. We need to find ways of rehabbing some of these blighted homes, apartment buildings, motels, and have a plan for you to get out of homelessness, not to stay in it, but to come out or get mental health help or recovery help. And those are the kinds of programs that aren't always popular, but when you use them, they work.
Final question, Jarrell Williams, Executive Director of the Light of Life Rescue Mission. We heard about the governor's $600 million plan, 10 years to revitalize downtown Pittsburgh. Is any part of that plan been revealed to you that would help in this issue that you're dealing with every day?
No, not directly, but I have a lot of ideas.
All right. Well,
I have ideas where we could come together and we could make some a real impact. I think Allegheny County has the opportunity, because of all the assets and the people here, to set a national model of helping people get out of homelessness into affordable and safe housing. And we can do it here together, Larry.
Well, now is the time. We got to make sure you get in touch with the people that are part of this collective that has a vision for the next 10 years. Jarrell, appreciate the work you do every day. God bless you.
Thank you. God bless you. And hey, let's go Steelers.
All right. Yeah. Bye week 6-2. We got that going for us. All right. Jarrell Gilliam, again, Executive Director of the Light of Life Rescue Mission. They do really great work every day here. You're going to get a chance to win tickets to see The Red One. It's a big holiday blockbuster with The Rock that's going to open on the 15th nationwide, but we're going to let you see it sooner by listening to the Big K Morning Show. Also, right after the news at 8:30, what's being done to ensure a fraud-free election? And there's a lot of discussion around that. Meanwhile, what are people talking about otherwise?
Well, over 45 million people around the country are estimated to have cast early votes, Larry. 45 million. Wow.
That's, to me, remarkable that it's that many this soon. People are anxious. And I think a lot of the politicians are wondering, you know, since the last polls have this as a dead heat in Pennsylvania and basically across the country, we'll see if that's accurate or not. Polls are fraught with, a margin of error that's sometimes larger than the margin of error they say it is.
Well, they missed the last presidential election badly.
Yes, they did.
There are good reasons, I think, for that happening. First and foremost is the people that they are hearing from who are responding are the willing.
Right.
They're talking to the people who are willing. And so you have a, you don't have a cross section. You have partial, you know, partial cross section of the voting public on that. And people are getting more and more difficult to reach.
A lot of people do not want to share their thoughts with anybody.
I don't want to talk to a pollster or answer any online surveys. I just don't.
I heard Colin Dunlap talking about getting text now. Hey, we see you haven't voted yet.
Yep.
And I'm like, that's none of your business. You hit stop. You know what? I'm going to vote. I'm going to vote in person, and I'm not going to tell you who I'm going to vote. And why am I getting all these texts? And I keep hitting stop, and they keep coming from...
Oh, yeah.
How?
I wound up getting my ballot in the mail, and within 48 hours of receiving the ballot, I was already getting texts. Don't forget to cast your ballot. It's like, you got to be kidding.
And, you know, we got some feedback from our Instant Access, instantaccesskdkradio.com, that I thought I'd share. One of our steady listeners, Ed, he wants to know, are there any guidelines or rules for these political ads that we're hearing? And
boy, this is one that I hate to bring this up, but we're required. You know,
we cannot edit or judge what we have to air.
What they send us,
correct? And
it can be a pile of manure.
And right,
and we have to run it.
They could
by
say
law.
Anything.
Yep,
and they are allowed and permitted to do that. Unlike a company, the FTC, the Federal Trade Commission, would be under their scrutiny for claims that they make about products or services they have.
Yeah, they're could be legally liable, you know, for making false claims or false representations in a regular commercial. But when you're talking about the politics here, whether it's the candidates, the campaigns, or the super PACs that are buying these, I mean, some of the things are
Most of it's out and out BS. Let's just call it what it is.
Right, my friend, you're absolutely right.
And people have to know that they can say anything about anybody. They can steal pictures, videos, sound from anybody and use it without compensation or permission. They just can do whatever the hell they want to do and have been doing and dragging us all down this road for a long, long, long time.
Yeah, I know that. I can't remember who it. I think it was Colin. Colin Dunlap was talking about. He's just done with the,
right. Well, he
listening
was
to the commercial. It shuts him off. You know, doesn't listen to it anymore.
During his show,
and that's what I do when I'm getting ready for the newscast. I've got the TV on. Commercial break comes on. I just kind of mute the speaker so I can concentrate without the distractions.
This just in: both candidates apparently are from another planet, not the same planet, but another planet. You know, they can say anything they want.
That's
and
right.
What was interesting about Colin yesterday is he was talking about this, and while he was talking about it, he got another text, you know, during the conversation, and then he read that right on the air.
Wow.
So stop texting us. We don't want to hear from we want to hear from our audience, but we don't want to hear from any of the political advocates texting us. Please stop robo texting. I hit stop all the time, but
I think I must have blocked at least 24 of these texts.
How'd they get
over
my
the last month or so? Yeah.
Hey, 6 days and counting until the presidential election next Tuesday, and voter integrity, a very important subject, and we're going to start checking in with CBS.
With Election Day drawing near, election officials are working to debunk false claims, calling into question the integrity of the process and the results. That comes as former President Trump and the Republican National Committee are suing some Democratic officials, alleging problems with the process. CBS's Skylar Henry looks at how election officials are trying to combat misinformation and show voters the upcoming election is legitimate.
As we inch closer to Election Day, officials and lawmakers are working to ensure the integrity of the voting process.
More confidence leads to greater participation, which is a good thing for our country.
In dozens of previous cases, courts have found no evidence of widespread voter fraud. That includes claims about improper registration, non-citizens' participation, and the voting systems themselves.
How is this process, I guess, safe, for a lack of a better word?
Every election jurisdiction, every county in the country has
very clear rules about how ballots are handled.
Chris Mann with the Center for Election Innovation and Research says as early voting expands across the country, poll workers are able to focus on other potential issues.
It does a lot to help them, give them more time to deal with any problems, whether that's a power outage at a polling place, misinformation about voting procedures.
And that misinformation is, in part, leading to an uptick in threats and abuse to more than 10,000 local election officials nationwide, according to the Brennan Center for Justice.
It really, I think, has come as a shock to a lot of local election officials, especially, you know, in non-battleground states, these areas that they've become the focus of this kind of attention.
Officials are stressing that people with questions about the process should go to vote.gov and get information about voting in their jurisdictions from legitimate sources before casting their ballot. Skyler Henry, CBS News, Washington.
And we are joined by Norm Eisen, who is the founder of Democracy Defenders, talking about this very issue of protecting fair elections. Norm, welcome to KDKA.
Thanks for having me, Larry.
We have a history at this radio station, and the first scheduled program were the presidential returns of 1920. Come a long way since, or have we? I think the integrity of the election is more in the spotlight this year than ever. So what protections are in place as you work, as I understand, a nonpartisan effort to just ensure that everybody's vote counts once?
Larry, everyone in the state, all your listeners can be confident that their vote can be safely cast and freely and fairly counted. We have strong state laws guaranteeing that the balloting will represent the will of the voters, that the freedom to choose our elected leaders that defines us as Americans, that fundamental freedom on November 5th that all of us are going to be exercising with the eyes of the nation upon us, that works. And it's backed up not only by laws that protect that, but also by our state and local election officials, the folks who administer these elections. They're experienced, they're tough. They went through a lot in the stress of 2020 and other contests, and they'll make sure the voting works. And then around the country, you have the United States Department of Justice, you have U.S. attorneys, you have federal law enforcement. If anybody does anything wrong, they have eyes on it, and they'll make sure the system works. So there are multiple layers, belt and suspenders, to make sure every voter go out, cast your ballot. It's safe. Your vote will count, and it could make all the difference. We had elections in 2022 where the outcomes were decided by a little over 500 votes. So everyone should vote with confidence.
And I know that a lot of people are aware, I think 54 million people have already voted in the country, which is actually a big number. And there has never been, I don't think, more scrutiny leading into this election about voter integrity and election integrity in and of itself. So that said, again, you feel confident. Does it surprise you that Pennsylvania is literally the keystone in this election?
It doesn't surprise me. Pennsylvania is the keystone state in its motto and in the blue wall, Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin. So you're the most likely tipping point state, the state most likely to decide the election going into the contest. And it really imposes an incredible, an honorable, patriotic duty, Larry, on every Pennsylvanian, whoever you support. And this is not only true of the presidential, up and down the ballot. Get out there and make your voice heard. It could affect the course of American history, particularly with the race so, so tight. Folks, the folks who are listening to us right now, if all of them were to get out there and express their preferences, that could make the difference in the presidential election, the Senate election, and many more. And I hope every single listener will do that. This is your chance, all of our chances, to make a momentous impact on our country and its future.
Norm Eisen, founder of Democracy Defenders. You can go to democracydefenders.org for more details of the work you do. Norm, thank you.
Thanks, Larry.
TV anchor woman, of course, Marty Griffin's wife. And Christine, along with Ken Rice and I and Diane Hupp, the president of Children's Hospital, spent time yesterday getting ready for this year's 71st annual telethon, which started right here on KDKA. So many years ago, and one of the takeaways, and we'll talk to Christine about this, Aaron, was to be at Children's Hospital. You know, we talk about Children's Hospital. I think everybody understands what a treasure it is to have such a place in the region for kids. But then when you're there and you see the day-to-day operations, even for an hour, and the families that are, you know, we were on the sixth floor and we saw so many people come and go, and the kids and grandparents, and, you know, your just heart goes out to these kids and their families that are dealing with issues that would have them at the hospital.
It's like a feeling you kind of wish you could bottle up and carry with you to remind you there's things bigger than yourself happening.
Right. While people are anxious about the election, for instance, mm-hmm. and the anxiety and divisiveness that it has created, and all the things that people complain about on a daily basis. But when you're there, none of that matters.
Right. Hearing a kid ring the bell.
Health of a child matters. And I know being at the Steelers game Monday night, for instance, there's a young man who was dealing with cancer for 6 years. And he finally was able to ring the bell. And NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell was at the game. And they surprised this young man, I'm guessing he was like 12 years old, with a pair of tickets to the Super Bowl in New Orleans.
Wow.
On the sidelines, they surprised him and his family. And so those are the kind of things that you want to gravitate to when you're feeling, you know, the gravity of all this divisiveness, is to know on a daily basis that most people are good, most people are doing the right things. And in particular, at Children's Hospital, just to be there for an hour, you walk away feeling so much different.
Larry Richard with Anchorman Paul Rasmussen.
Of the work that the medical staff.
During our 7 o'clock hour, we talked to Rich Fitzgerald, Executive Director of the Southwestern Pennsylvania Commission. One of the things he mentioned was
a treasure
increasing in a number of sectors, including Amazon.
Coming up in December, December 19th is when we'll have the
Paul, in just
telethon.
A moment, we're going to, on KDK
kind of
TV,
get a follow
we'll
up to that with
here on KDK Radio as we
Paul
have
J. Goff
since
the
very beginning.
Business Times,
and people around the country used to wonder. And I talked to
of the region
former
is,
host,
I think, interesting
who sat
and
in his very air chair, Jack Colgan, about this
because he was there when
surrounding counties
and with
really
such a large, large industry as well. Like, Mitsubishi is no small company.
Outpouring of generosity,
but I think a lot of
from
people
your region
to help Children's Hospital.
How do you guys do
this? Far more than that.
Yeah, they do.
We
a
don't
lot
do this.
Different things.
The people of this area
and,
do it.
Today, the federal
and
government
been
is expected to release an economic scorecard for the third quarter of the year.
I'm excited to be here for that.
With a brief update here,
this will be your first one with us.
Business analyst Jill Schlesinger.
All right, I want to give away a pair of tickets to see this.
Domestic
new,
product,
it's a holiday
GDP
movie. It's
is expected to show that the economy expanded by an annualized pace of 3%.
Dwayne Johnson, and they got
that
a bunch of other stars in this movie.
Quarter,
and you're going to see it before anyone else at the AMC Waterfront Theater on November 12th.
The
movie doesn't
basis.
Open nationwide.
So that said, we'll get the official
15th.
Word coming out later
412
today.
412
and right
922
now, by
video on the radio,
we'll take
you
caller
can see
number
Paul
J. Goff of the Pittsburgh Business Times on
922-1020. Paul, good morning. Good to see you again.
Yeah, good seeing you too, Larry. Thanks for having me on.
So Paul and I, Rasmussen, we're talking about Mitsubishi and some of the other expansion going on in the region. Do you have some more details on what they're doing?
Yeah, Mitsubishi Electric Power Products, which is based in Warrendale, part of the big Mitsubishi company in Japan, is going to expand its operations here in the Pittsburgh region and build a 160,000-foot factory addition, square foot factory addition.
And will this also be in right there in the Warrendale area?
What? I'm losing you.
You froze for a second. Oh. Go ahead. We got you back.
Sorry about that.
It's all good.
So it's 160,000 square foot factory, part of their an expansion to their operations in Warrendale.
And the jobs created there, when will people be able to? I know people get anxious. They hear jobs are available. When will they be available?
Probably a couple of years from now. It's going to take some doing. I believe it's going to add about 200 jobs, and they've already got about 600 or 700 there, if I'm not mistaken.
Boy, and as Paul Rasmussen knows, that whole corridor up there, as you get to the northern Allegheny County and Butler County area, is just blowing up, isn't it, Paul?
It is growing like a weed up that way, Paul.
Yeah, it really is, and it's actually all. Airport with Mainspring Energy and some other companies that are doing work in this infrastructure electric transition.
And whatever happened to nuclear power? I know they built this giant campus for Westinghouse that was supposed to be the epicenter of building reactors around the world. Obviously, that infrastructure, all those buildings are still there. What is the status? Do you know, Paul?
You know, one of my colleagues covers that more in terms of what's happening at Cranberry Woods, but I can tell you that Westinghouse is actually really reviving itself and its business, the nuclear business. It opened for the first time a plant Vogtle in Georgia, which is the biggest and really first nuclear power plant.
Now, we lost you. Sorry, Paul.
Plant in States.
All right, we're losing you.
They've got some other ones that are being built.
Well, thanks for the effort. Paul J. Goff with the Pittsburgh Business Times. Read all about it.
Larry, I'd like to throw in about Westinghouse, what they're promoting lately, the last couple of years.
Yes.
And we've done a story on the smaller reactor. It's the a much smaller footprint. They feel that that has good applications. But now we're finding out, for example, out in the eastern part of Pennsylvania, they're going to restart Three Mile Island because they need the power for this artificial intelligence. The amount of power that they have to draw, apparently, to have these run these servers for AI, is the demand is that high, and it's a clean energy source. It's you know, I guess that's one of the things that we might see an uptick in business pretty quickly now.
You know, when the Pittsburgh Speaker Series first started, one of the first speakers was Walter Cronkite, the late CBS News anchorman. And I had a chance to interview him for television. And we sat down and did a one-on-one. And my first question was, did he recall ever doing a big story in the Pittsburgh area? And he said, well, Larry, in 1954, the nuclear reactor in Shippingport, Pennsylvania, went online. And I was there. And I'm like, wow, Walter Cronkite.
That's when he was a reporter, right?
Yeah, 1954.
Yeah.
When you think about it, this region, and when it comes to energy, oil was discovered. Obviously, Oil City to the north, Franklin, those areas. The first oil wells were here, not Texas. Pennsylvania. And since then, all that's come out of that, nuclear power, and now we're sitting on this Marcellus Shale play that's obviously everybody knows that we have this tremendous resource here for power. And then hydrogen is going to be the next big thing I hear.
I think that is ultimately the answer. And once they figure out a way to convert water into energy, we've got an unlimited supply of hydrogen to work with, right? I think that might wind up being the cleanest, most efficient use that we can come up with. Now, it has to be, they have to figure out a way to do it without, it has to be more efficient than what it has been in the past.
And this mainspring company that we've heard about in the last week that's going to put this energy generation system that can handle all these different kinds, including hydrogen, could be the game changer that we've been looking for. So we'll keep you posted here in the Big K. Remember that song?
Yes, I do. What a beautiful, beautiful, hauntingly beautiful song.
That's a good way to describe it. Hauntingly beautiful. So the original Kansas band members are going to, you know, when they really broke out, they credit Pittsburgh and Rich Engler, our buddy, the legendary concert promoter, for doing this, giving them their big start. They kind of filled in, and they're going to be, the Benedum used to be the Stanley Theater.
Mm-hmm.
And they had this tour. They started here for their 50th anniversary, and they're ending it here, which is kind of cool. And that's coming up on Wednesday, December 11th. So you got the band members. They're all going to come together for this, you know, one-off after this tour was announced in Pittsburgh. They're going to end where it started, which is kind of cool.
The song, by the way, there's an interesting little sidebar to the song Dust in the Wind. The gentleman who wrote the song was practicing just a finger pattern on his guitar. That was what you hear at the very beginning of Dust in the Wind. And I think it was his wife or one of the members of the band said, that's really beautiful. We should do something with that. And that's where it came from.
Yeah, I could see that.
Mm-hmm.
The beautiful guitar lick.
Yeah.
There's a story like that with Smokey Robinson, Cruisin', one of his big solo hits, right? And after the Miracles, he was a solo artist, and he had this, he had the music to Cruisin', right? 5 years went by, he said, and he was driving.
What, like without lyrics?
Without lyrics.
Okay, okay.
So he had the music in his mind, and he just couldn't find the right words that he felt went with the music. And you know what happened 5 years later? He was driving down Santa Monica Boulevard in Los Angeles in a convertible. And he thought to himself, man, I'm just cruising.
That's great.
And it hit him just like that. Cruising.
And when that song starts, you know what you're hearing. I mean, from the very get-go, it's...
Yeah, he opened his show this summer here when he was at HM3 Independence Fund Celebrity Care Fest. Him and Pitbull that day. It was incredible when he came out on stage. You know, the guy's in it. He's like 84 years old. Women, everybody loved him. They knew the music.
Mm, yeah.
And by
he takes
the way,
really good care of himself.
By the way, that weekend, extraordinarily successful in helping Children's Hospital. $400,000 to Children's Hospital. I want to thank HM3 Independence Fund and everybody that participated, including our group here that helped promote the event. Also, $100,000 to the Jerome Bettis Bus Stops Here Foundation and $100,000 to Mel Blunt's Youth Home, which has done extraordinary work for years and years. So it was very uplifting, the end result of that weekend. But Smokey, he's always got these great stories. I told you when I asked him, as a singer, songwriter, and producer, he's credited with over 4,000 records. Can you imagine? And I said, Smokey, can you pick one song? Oh, Larry, that's an impossible question. He goes, but I have a favorite song, I have a favorite album, and it's not mine. He said, at one point I lived near, he was, Marvin Gaye was a neighbor, and he was going to visit Marvin, and Marvin's sitting at the piano, and he goes, what you working on, man? He said, that's not me, Smoke. That's the Lord writing this song.
Yeah,
and
what's song going on? Yep.
Yeah, which we, you know, open the show with on Fridays every morning. You know, and I told Smokey that, I can't believe that. That's the same song I use every Friday. It's like when you're on a news talk station, what's going on is kind of your mantra.
But I love that music
stuff. Well, the song itself is, you know, and what we have is the instrumental version. That these were musicians known as the Funk Brothers, the, you know, studio musicians at Motown, doing their thing.
The Funk Brothers, that's right.
It's just a wonderful sound.
I think you're the one
that's so relaxing.
Me.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's, well, it's such an iconic song. And keep in mind, Berry Gordy did not want Marvin Gaye to release this song.
No, this was a war protest song. Right.
And he didn't want any kind of controversy associated with the music. So even though the 60s, with all the war protest songs that were out there, he didn't want Motown to get involved. And Marvin had a brother that served in Vietnam. And he said, I'm writing this song and I'm putting it out. And the rest is history. And it was chosen by Rolling Stone magazine a couple of years ago as the most powerful song in the past 50 years, to give you some idea of the impact.
I don't doubt that one bit.
Yeah. And who's doing the music?
The Funk Brothers.
The Funk Brothers.
There's a lot going on there. It's simple, but there's a lot going on.
Good stuff, man. Does something. Music can transport you to another time and another place. And I often love to listen to music while I walk because I want to be transported to another time and another place.
Not to mention just put you in a good mood.
Take a deep breath. Get out and enjoy this day. Seize the day. Carpe diem. All right, every Wednesday at this time, from KDKA-TV anchorwoman Christine Sorensen, who also happens to be the bride of her own Marty Griffin. And Christine and I were at Children's Hospital yesterday getting ready for the 71st annual Children's Hospital Telethon on KDKA-TV and KDK Radio. Happy and honored to be a part of it. We were also with UPMC Children's President Diane Hupp and anchorman Ken Rice. So I think we were there only for about an hour doing the promo shoot. But Christine, I thought about, you know, with everything going on in the world, you spend 1 hour at Children's Hospital and seeing the kids and the families and what goes on there kind of changes your perspective for a moment.
That's a really great point. You're right. I mean, we get so caught up in our own lives and the politics, and you step away in a place like that and you realize what's really important and how a lot of kids, especially, and families are facing some really difficult things. So we're excited to be able to help with the telethon coming up in December.
Yeah, December 19th starts at 3:00 in the afternoon, and we'd appreciate if you'd participate. All right, let's talk about Kidsburg. People know Montessori, the Montessori schools. They've heard of it, even if they don't know. What is the Montessori method?
That's the thing. A lot of people know of the name, but they don't really know what it is. So it was founded, the first school, in 1907 in Italy by Maria Montessori. She was a physician, an educator, and her tenets of how to teach and what's important for kids are still used in the classroom today. And that includes several things like hands-on learning. So at this time when our kids are so spending so much time on their devices, this is really something that a lot of parents are drawn to. So for example, when I was looking at a class at the Montessori Children's Community in Sewickley, where I got to see this in action, a teacher brought in moss, and the child was touching it, looking at it through a microscope, drawing about it, learning about it, you know, that kind of hands-on learning. And it was a one-on-one instruction. Then for geometry, they had little movable wooden pieces that the kids are moving around to create different angles. Again, this was a one teacher and two kids. And then after, another big component is they then do a lot of individualized learning and get to spend more time on things they're excited about. So once they get the lesson, then they go off and they do their own thing and do these assignments. And if there's something they're passionate about, they have the time and freedom to explore that more. They also have multi-age classrooms. So this was a classroom of first, second, and third graders. So the lessons are separate. They're all doing math at the same time, maybe, but they're doing different lessons, different, again, self-directed. But what's cool is the leadership opportunities for the older kids to mentor the younger kids to learn from the older kids. So that's really an interesting dynamic with that. So most of the schools are preschool and kindergarten, but there are schools, including the one in Sewickley, that include elementary and even middle school, where they have a, when you go in these classrooms, it doesn't look like a regular classroom. There's no desks for kids. There are little tables, but no desks, no whiteboard, no smart board. It's very different. Even in the middle school, they have a house where the kids will live for a month during the school year over two separate periods to learn independence and how to live on their own. They have a shop that they work. It's wow. Very interesting, and I could see why a lot of people are really drawn to it.
Well, my brother Pat's wife, Amy, is that person running that for a long time.
Really?
Yeah. It's a really, I didn't know all of that, though.
Yeah.
I'm so glad to hear, because everybody knows Montessori school. We used to do school closings and delays, you know. That's one of them, but
yep.
I didn't know all the... you know, ideals behind it.
Yeah.
That's fascinating.
So you can go to kdka.com/Kidsburg. You'll see my story. You can see visually what I'm talking about of how this whole program works.
All right. Let's talk about, well, tomorrow's Halloween. Tonight is Devil's Night, they used to call it.
That's
right. I don't know if they still call it that. And then All Souls Day on Friday. And this weekend, Day of the Dead Festival.
Yes, exactly. So this is a traditional Mexican holiday celebrated on November 1st and 2nd, aligning with All Saints Day. And this Saturday in Squirrel Hill at a park, there's going to be a free festival. So much fun things going on. There's going to be live entertainment, a neighborhood parade led by the musical ensemble Timbaliza, kid-friendly crafts, face painting, life-size puppets, a community altar, and Mexican food trucks. So sounds like a really fun time.
And I love the Mexican artwork associated with Day of the Dead, those great skull masks that are really art. And if you've been to some of the Mexican restaurants, have, you know, some of the decor and some of the ceramics with this great artwork.
It's absolutely
pretty cool. All
I
right.
love that.
Great Expectations. That's a classic.
It really is a classic. And it is being put on by Prime Stage Theater, which is known for presenting shows specifically of books. So, of course, this is the classic Charles Dickens rags to riches tale where Pip, who's a young orphan in the 19th century England, his life's about to change in this world ruled by money and social class, and about does he find his fortune. What I love about the New Hazlett Theater, so these shows are this Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and then the next weekend, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, so the 1st through the 10th, is that they always have shows specifically for people with disabilities. So there's one show specifically that is sensory inclusive, another show that is an audio description, so anyone who is blind can enjoy the show, and then a separate show that is ASL live caption for people who have hearing disabilities. So it's a really, you know, great opportunity for anyone to see it. And another thing that's really cool is they have Dickens' great, great, great grandchild, who's going to be doing a Zoom this Saturday night, talking about the family connection and about things, stories that have been passed down. Yeah, it's going to be really cool. So that'll be part of the show, too. So check out kidsburg.org. You'll see our list of all the fun things going on, as well as my Kidsburg story on Montessori.
And you were just at a show, speaking of shows,
another great show this weekend, too. Yeah, this is part of the Broadway tour through the Pittsburgh Cultural Trust at the Benedum Center downtown. I saw And Juliet, which I didn't really know much about, but it's a kind of funny farce take on Romeo and Juliet, like what would happen if they didn't die and there was a happier ending, okay? Yeah. But the best part of the show is not really just the story, which is cute and fun, but it's the music. So it's all songs that have been co-written by Max Martin, which I've since learned is like the biggest hit writer of the like late 90s, early 2000s. So songs from Pink, Demi Lovato, Britney Spears,
really?
Justin Timberlake, Backstreet Boys. They're all songs you know except for one new song. The whole show, my friend and I were literally laughing and singing and smiling so much our faces hurt. It was that fun.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
See, and Juliet at the Benedum, kidsburg.org. Christine, thank you.
Thanks.
You're
going to
be back with, well, you'll be here with Marty's checking in.
Yeah, and then I'll be on his show from 1 to 2 today.
Beautiful. And until 2, Marty Griffin, get Marty. Marty's working on a story right now, wondering why there's a police vehicle outside the window. Christine, you know, you probably, Marty gets texts, probably has to be 24/7.
Oh, he's called police in the past to, you know, check on us to be safe.
Right.
Yeah, because there are people out there, you just never know.
Right. And Patrick is also here. Here comes Marty. Everything all right, Marty? What'd you uncover?
Cops with warrants for you again.
Oh,
what's going on, man?
Not to get too philosophical with you, but when we're younger, in our 20s, right out of college, let's say, you spend most of your time dressed up going to weddings, baby showers.
Oh, yeah.
Then as you get older, and I was talking to Christine about this, you have to learn to adapt to death. And honestly, they had a close friend die last week, right? One of all of us knew Ann Leineberger really well.
Former news director at KDK-TV.
Yeah.
My sister's struggling with pancreatic cancer. Someone I love dearly, one of my boys, insanely sick right now. And then you have a nephew that has a baby. These sorts of things that as you get older, if you don't manage it, you end up under your covers thinking the world sucks. But it also gives me this perspective, and I talk to my kids about this and certainly my wife, in that this rhetoric, like Republicans were gleeful that Joe Biden said that idiotic statement about saying these Democrats, these followers of Trump, are garbage. They were, my phone blew up. They couldn't wait to rat out Joe. You know what I mean? They're actually happy that we're so hateful toward each other. And I think until we can find a better way to make a difference, which we use around here all the time, then we're all just going to be jag-offs saying, hey, you're fat. No, you're fat.
Well, Christine and I were at Children's Hospital for an hour yesterday. You just spend an hour there, and it can help change your perspective.
It's really
what
true.
What families are dealing with on a daily basis.
Well, plus the life that they see and the death that these nurses have to manage for a living. My sister, Sandy Tresser, has seen more dead than any combat veteran. And how they manage that and how we manage the victories in our lives with the defeats makes us a better man or a lesser man. And we can wallow in it or celebrate the victories. And it's our choice as Americans on a political scale. One of my friends who is an insane Trumper and goes nuts on Democrats, guess what she's thinking about today? Her dog is sick. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That's where the rubber hits the road.